those search lights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Good morning, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring an individual and talk about their journey or an organisation or an event onto the radio. And today I have Lisa Lobre de Bruin. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Herb. How are you?
I'm well, thanks very much for coming in. It's a lovely day outside. We just beautiful spring day.
Yep.
You're at UNE and you're at the Agronomy and Soil Science Discipline, mm-hmm. School of Environment and Rural Science.
Yep.
Now, when did you come to Armidale?
It's quite a while, actually. I've celebrated 32 years at UNE, so I've been here since 1993, and Armidale is my home now, yep.
Well, I usually say 15 years and you're a local.
Yeah.
Which is plenty. Which is plenty. I think you're a local.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, you were born in Western Australia.
Western Australia. And I actually did spent most of my formative years in WA doing my degree, both undergraduate and postgraduate, at the University of Western Australia. And then I travelled across the Nullarbor to my job in Tasmania, which was working with the Department of Primary Industries and Fisheries, as they were called then, and worked on earthworms in dairy farms and looked at the changes in their composition and abundance with changes in land management. So they were irrigating, and how is that actually affecting earthworm abundance and diversity?
So there'd have to be some sort of middle point where too much irrigation, less worms, over-irrigation.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing is it was sort of a perverse outcome, really, because what they hadn't realised was that they were irrigating over summer, and normally earthworms are inactive over that period. They're safely estivating or hibernating, if you like, deeper into the soil, and by irrigating they were raising the earthworms into the surface of the soil and actually exposing them to trampling by the dairy cows. So in actual fact, over the experiment, we ran it for a couple of years, it showed the decline in one of the earthworm species, which was a longer living earthworm, and an increase in the shorter living earthworm that was sitting under the dung pats. So, yeah, it wasn't expected, but I think they realised that you can't just change land management and not think about some of the consequences.
So as a result of that, and you're working for the Department of Ag down there, as a result, did you come up with some best management practices to change people's way they irrigated and how they managed their dairy farm?
In reality, probably not a lot of change in that, but maybe more awareness of what was happening with irrigation. The interesting thing about the why they were irrigating was because they were putting more introduced pasture species that were not drought tolerant. So I think it was getting to look at why they were putting those particular pastures in, and maybe to think about more drought tolerant.
Sounds like a whole of farm management sort of approach was needed.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting because it was funded by the Dairy Research Development Corporation, and they weren't expecting that result, I don't think.
Soils. I ask everybody this same question, particularly from the sciences, who have got a history of working with sciences. What was the first thing in your childhood, or some of the experiences in your childhood, that moved you towards sciences or soils or earthworms?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I suppose my dad worked for the ag department, and my early years were helping him out in the glasshouses, watering his pot trials, and also we went out a lot into the bush. And so from a very early age, my parents would take us out to places in the hills out of Perth, and we'd go bushwalking. And I think just being outside, I just generally wanted to be outside. Didn't want to be stuck in an office, which is funny enough that that's what I do a lot of the time now, but desperately wanted to be outside doing things, not stuck in an office, yeah.
So that sort of leads me to what you do at the School of Environmental and Rural Science.
Yeah.
Tell me what you do and what your other co-workers do.
Yeah, well, it's a very diverse career as an academic. People probably don't realise that academics are not only teaching, so we're educating both undergraduate students from in various degrees, but also postgrads. We're training the next generation of scientists, if you like, that are going to become researchers. And we're also doing our own research. So we're not only involved with our PhD students, but we're carrying out our own research, getting funding, and also contributing a lot of service. So, you know, we through the school, we all have roles through the school to support the school. But we also do outreach for the university. So I do travel to Melbourne and Gunnedah and various other places to show, you know, school leavers what they might be able to achieve if they come to UNE.
Yes, I remember my time as a student at UNE doing 100 and 200 level soil science.
Yeah.
And I still remember a fantastic field experiment we did by going out and looking at grazed and ungrazed parcels.
Oh, right.
And the top 10 centimetres of soil we brought back and went through and saw how many bugs and worms and things were in the top 10 centimetres of the soil. And obviously the temperature of the grazed against ungrazed had a real impact on what macrofauna, microfauna was in that soil. So that still stuck with me.
Yeah, and we do still do that. We have intensive schools, and we're going to have one coming up just in a couple of weeks. We'll have 110 students on campus, and we'll be rotating them through various activities. So some of them will be going out into the field. We'll be looking at soil profiles around Armidale, but also on the university's properties, but also outside Armidale. And we'll also be showing them, actually one of the lecturer, Ivana Oliver, she's actually designed some models of soil so they can put the soil profile together it's created plastics, and they can put the soil profile together, and they can also look at the different soil structures and so on in a model form.
Well, that leads me quite nicely into the difference, your time at UNE teaching about soils and how the university's changed and where you see your future, I suppose, in teaching soils.
It's interesting because I came to UNE when I just as many on-campus students as distance students, as they were called then, and now we have a lot more online students. So it has had a big effect, I think, having more online students, but we've also had to be very creative about how we teach online, how we create engagement online, and it has meant that we do think very carefully about the activities, and we try and ensure that they still have that on-campus experience. So we have a lot of intensive schools in our area of the university in environmental and rural science, but we're also seeing the growth of artificial intelligence, which means that we have to be assured that the students are doing their own work and not getting too much assistance from artificial intelligence. So we're looking at how we can do that more transparently.
Well, yeah, no. I think it's one of those new things that have come to the fore in recent times, and a lot of universities have to deal with it. But you just mentioned Ivana Oliver.
Yeah,
she's one of your co-doctors.
Yeah, she's been with us for 10 years at UNE. She started off with a PhD, doing a PhD, and she's come from Victoria, where she worked with the government there, looking at carbon, and then she went on to do a PhD in soil carbon. And she's been teaching for the last, I'd say, well, she's been teaching for a while, actually, but the last 5 years, and more importantly in her role now for the last 3 years. But she runs a lot of our soils program. She's also actually the Vice President of Soil Science Australia, which is a very impressive role to have as such a younger person, younger lecturer. And she's also, so she teaches a lot of the soils units, yeah.
So just go back a step. Now, you said off air that basically the soil sciences now is a lot less experience out in the field than what used to be, like government departments. Now, tell me about sort of that loss of corporate knowledge that you've seen over time our government departments.
You know, I'd say that there's very little active community has shrunk quite a bit. And it means that, we're looking at ways to hold on to that corporate knowledge, hold on to the soils knowledge that we have that has been invested in some of our more senior people as they retire. So one of the, I don't know if you're leading into this, but one of the issues we have is that, yeah, that field experience, you can only get that by going out and digging a pit or coming to an intensive school and looking at soil profile in the landscape. So you actually see what it looks like. You can't really get that from looking at a video or anything else. So I think the hands-on approach to how we teach soils and also how we give those skills to people so that when they do go out in the field, they'll know what their soil is and they'll be able to advise people more accurately about how to manage that soil because they know what the soil actually is and how it behaves.
Yes, I think that loss of corporate knowledge, we've seen it a number of times throughout our regional sort of rural areas where the pendulum shifts, governments decide to take money out of different departments and restructure them, and what ends up happening is that corporate knowledge is lost.
So and it's not always easy to get that knowledge back.
That's right.
Yeah.
And soils, I mean, here's the simple question, and maybe just a simple answer, but why are soils so important to us?
Oh, look, yeah, where do I start?
Well, is there a simple answer?
It's interesting because I think a lot of the things that Ivana is doing and myself when we teach soils is making soils more visible. I think for a lot of us, we tend to ignore them. A lot of soil scientists are very passionate about their soils and they get quite cranky, if you like, that people don't think they're more important. But I think it is because they're hidden for a lot of the time. Only when they're eroding and something terrible's happening do you actually see soil. What we're trying to do is make the invisible visible. You know, the fact that soil is a ecosystem. Someone tattooed on their arm, "Don't treat soil like dirt," because they basically felt so passionate that people use that word dirt, but dirt is inert, like dust. It's not alive, it's not vibrant. And soil really is a living thing. You know, we have a lot of underground activity, the roots, the microbes, the ants, the various other things that live in the soil, but people don't really think about that a lot.
Yeah, it's certainly definitely easily understated, the role of soils, and yeah. I go back to that example that I had when I did a uni course, the uni units in soils. I was so surprised how much fauna lived in the top 10 centimetres of the soil profile, particularly in the ungrazed parcel. Yeah. That had a less temperature. But yeah. That sort of then leads me into something that Ivana's doing, the Australian Soil Judging Competition. What's that
when is that? It's probably new to a lot of people. Probably never can't imagine people judging soils. It's not like Best in Show. But essentially it is about people honing their skills, developing skills in identifying a soil profile. Probably like in a conventional, traditional way, using the nomenclature and identification, but also still seeing the soil in the field. So the soil judging competition is coming up in later in November, 25th to 28th of November, and essentially there's going to be 175 people gathering to do this in a competition mode. So they have a practice day where they just look at a soil close to UNE, and then they'll go out to a competition site where they'll be taken to an unknown location where they're going to be allowed to go into various pits for a time, and they'll have to describe that soil from the top to the bottom, and they'll be marked on how accurate their identification, their description of the soil is, the description of the soil, yeah.
Oh, sounds like a great thing. But that sort of leads me then into a book that Ivana, yourself and Oliver Knox are doing, Talking Soil, A Down-to-Earth Guide to Soil Engagement.
Yes, and this has been happening for a while now, but we floated the idea to CSIRO Publishing through 2023, and we were fortunate enough to get the book contract last year. And we've been working with 22 other contributors around the world, and they're all contributing their talking soil stories, as we're calling them. So they're people that are working in academia, research for industry, mostly are, and some consultants. So they're mostly people who've studied soil, who have a professional understanding of soils. So we see this book as giving new professionals understanding what it is to talk soils, how to be engaging in talking soils, and also to give agency to those soil practitioners, so to allow them to understand that their own local knowledge is very valuable, that they should be going out there and digging up their soil, discovering what it's like, looking at their soil more intently, and thinking about how they might manage it to improve soil. So we're trying to put the agency back in the practitioner's hands so that they'll understand soil better.
So that is due out in 2026.
I hope so, yes, that's the plan. That's the plan, yeah.
But then that leads me into activities and things at Black Gully. Now, you and Ivana will be at Black Gully.
Yes, we will. We will be having a little stall. I think we'll be located near a couple of other stalls like Weathering Together and other type of activities that are similar to us, yes. And we'll be having a few demonstrations of how to look at your soil. Visual soil assessment being one of them, which I've done with smallholder farmers in Vietnam, digging holes and looking at the soil structure and how you assess how well structured the soil is. And then we also have another activity that people can do quite easily, which is called Soil Your Undies, which is burying a pair of underpants just 5 centimetres below the soil surface, making sure you mark it so you can retrieve it, but then coming back 8 weeks later and seeing how much is degraded, because it's making the invisible visible, which is the soil microbes. So the soil microbes, if you said, like you said about the moisture, if the soil's moist, then the microbes are going to be more active. So we want to see if they're active in the soil.
So that's burying a pair of your best cotton underwear.
Yes, that's right. Very important point.
Important, the cotton underwear.
Because it has to be biodegradable.
Biodegradable and something that the microbes will eat. And the level of decomposition will tell you how much microbial activity is in the soils. So that'll be very interesting. So people can get along to your stall at Black Gully 2025.
Yes.
There's activities, there's soil assessment.
Yep.
Being able to ID the properties of soils.
Yeah, so Ivana would be going to talk about soil judging, maybe about the critical characteristics of soil that help you identify a soil. So know your soil is really, I think, the really important part of any soil science understanding your soil is what is your soil, because until you know what the soil is, the type of soil, even if it's just in a general sense of the texture profile or the soil water holding capacity and that sort of thing, it sort of gives you an understanding of how you can manage it and how you can look after it.
Well, I think most active gardeners probably have a pH kit.
Yes.
And they're able to tell the soil pH. Rarely would the gardener go into the more in-depth understanding of the soil itself other than just the pH. So this would probably be interesting to any gardener who was interested in...
And I think the Soil Your Undies, for instance, is an easy one because it doesn't require expensive soil testing of looking at the nutrient levels. And interestingly, it's a good one for biology. So you're looking at the soil biology. The other ones you can do is just look at your structure, because the structure of your soil is really important to taking in water and holding on to water. So if you understand a few of those basics, it's really quite helpful to understand if the compost or the nutrients, if you're applying fertilizer every year or putting something onto the garden like manure or compost, you want to know it's being incorporated, breaking down, becoming part of the soil aggregation, you know, coming to the sort of structure of the soil. Yep.
No, definitely one to get along to. That's the, what are you calling the
Talking Soil stall, I think. We're just keeping it brief, but we'll have a few. We'll be in a green UNE gazebo, yeah, so you'll probably spot us. UNE green is very bright lime green, so you'll be able to see us quite easily.
Now, get along to that if you want to know your soils. Ask questions about the soils.
Yeah, we'd love to hear your talking soil stories as well. Like, that's part of it, is to see how people here, how they understand their soil, what are they doing to discover their soil. And we can obviously help with that too, like show them other things they can do. But I've met locals here already that are found the soil app called Soils Near Me, which you can put on your phone and you can identify your soil from that. So I've learned that people already are trying to discover more about their soil.
Where I live, just out on Kelly's Plains, there's a red basalt hill behind me, and I've got the red basalt floaters that come through. Mm-hmm. So I know that my hillside is quite fertile because of the basalt soils.
Yes.
And quite good to grow tomatoes.
Yeah, so I think the two things people recognise about their soil is colour, the colour which you just mentioned, and also texture. So is it heavy soil, light, that sort of thing. So those are some of the two properties that most people identify with a soil, is colour and texture. But interestingly, those are the two hardest soil properties that they have in soil judging, because there's a perception of colour is quite different, and texture, they do hand texturing, and that is also quite subjective.
Oh, well, that'll be a very good competition. That's the 25th to 28th of November. You tell me that entries have closed.
Yeah, they have, unfortunately.
That'll be well, that's great for the town, 175 people coming along.
Yep.
But get down to Talking Soils Gazebo, the big green one, UNE, where you'll find out from Lisa and Ivana all the bits and pieces and the activities, ask questions, find out what's going on. Because, as you said, soil is not dirt.
Yes, that's right.
It's more to it. So we want people to actually start exploring soils, get to understand their soils. And as I said, other than just pH in the soils, there's more to it.
Yep.
And you can create a very fertile garden if you know your soils. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Dr. Lisa Lobre de Bruin from this is a discipline of agronomy and soil science at UNE, School of Environmental and Rural Science, and that is Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.